Welcome to Variant Frequencies. Month to month, our podcast brings you fiction stories from a different channel. Sci-fi, fantasy, horror, and some odd bands in between. Visit us at www.variantfrequencies.com. Hello, I'm Rick Stringer. Today's story is another big production. It is written by our own Parsec Award-winning author, Matt Wallace. I'm the narrator. We have three voices returning to Variant Frequencies. The first is Chuck Tomasi, the host and producer of Technorama, Freestyle Gmail Podcast, and Radio Yesterday. Chuck first appeared as Lucifer in a wonderful performance for the story Firstborn. If you've not heard Firstborn yet, then you should check it out at the very least to hear Chuck's performance. The second is Anton Buntik. Fans of the Failed Cities monologues by Matt Wallace will recognize Anton as the voice of Constable Klemenko, although in this story, he doesn't have a Russian accent. Speaking of the Failed Cities monologues, we have a cameo appearance by Neil Stringer. Neil is the voice of the one and only Ferris. If you are new to Variant Frequencies and don't know about the Failed Cities monologues, then you will want to follow the links on our site to the patiobooks.com version. And finally, we are happy to have Leanne Mabry from the Tag in the Seam podcast, the podcast for real women. This is Leanne's first time on Variant Frequencies, but we are hoping it won't be the last. You can also hear both Chuck and Leanne in brilliant performances on T. Morris's Billabub Battings podcast. Now, on to our story. Delve by Matt Wallace. Every 12 hours, the light above his door burns bloody and bright. Every 12 hours, a new batch rolls off the genetic assembly line. The saplings that will grow into a new human race. And every 12 hours, Lofgren's stems must delve deep beneath the surface of our shared consciousness. The purpose of the delve is simple: to cleanse human nature of its lesser angels, the savage beasts that long ago were given form and nearly destroyed us all. Mother baked a batch of protoplasm, and 12 hours later they began to slide from her incubating belly, one by one. Their titanium berths, like industrial bassinets moving down an automated track and arranging themselves across the mechanized nursery floor. 21 newborn babes. Not a one swaddled, not a one named, and not a single wailing set of lungs among them. They'd long ago stopped crying. When they red-lighted Stens for the delve, he was reading a Paris Campion novel by muted light. Dream Alley light. He was reading and dying for a drink of something. A snort of something. A shot of something. 12 hours hadn't dulled the edge from his last screen. Neither would 12 more. Or 12 more after that. But since no one had thought to install a pub or a liquor store in the satellite, time was his only salve. Not that the screeners were allowed to imbibe anyway. They weren't allowed to do anything that might interfere with the chemical process of their work. He couldn't even bribe a tech or a medic. The satellite's dispensary was automated, like 90% of their little spinning tube, ever circling Ganymede, like a steel mosquito. And so, Stens shifted uncomfortably in an ergonomically challenged chair, and tried to focus on Campion's spare hardtack prose, her sleazy characters, and spiderweb plots of murder and intrigue. Then, the metal-ensconced globule above his door lit up, blood red and glowing, like an irradiated sack of plasma, and Sten suddenly had something else to worry about. He saved his place in the novel and dimmed the PDA screen, leaving it on the utilitarian desk in the corner of his room. Sten's dressed hastily, black slacks and a plain white shirt, untucked and barely buttoned. A pair of cufflinks rested at the bottom of a dish on an end table next to the door. Sten's left them there, grabbing his boots where they were strewn at the foot of his bed. He entered the delving chamber 5 minutes later. They were waiting for him. Always waiting. The newborns behind their glass, the progenitor behind his glass, and Sten's caught in the middle. Father Causeway, the satellite's new progenitor, stood in the center of a small white viewing gallery, as still and histrionic as a Nazi portrait in some museum. Every time Sten saw Causeway with his small, round-shaven head and spice-brown skin, the man reminded him more and more of a hairless chihuahua. His long gunmetal tunic bore no insignia, just the silver fittings lined the front flap. As big and round as shotgun blasts in a steel door, hunter green gauntlets were thrust behind his back, uniformly at ease, the posture pouring down from an expression too blank to be serene.
"Good evening, Mr. Stens."
Father Causeway's hollow, disembodied voice reverberated from inside the gallery. Stens ignored him. Behind the glass that wasn't really glass, the newborn's berths were arranged like pawn islands on a chessboard. Behind them, Mother was winding down with a satisfied hum of her flowing ducts, the honeycomb light inside her urn-like body winking out. The berths were uncovered, and the newborns were exposed. All fat doll limbs and lumpy bodies the color of raw scrapes. Stens watched them through the reflection of a gaunt man that he supposed was himself. He recognized the flea specks of beard, the dirty tangles of his black hair, and that bird's nest covering his scalp, hiding the paper-cut scars, the pink taffy left by surgical lasers.
"Shall we begin, Mr. Stens?"
The delving chair was bolted to a dais at the head of the chamber. Stens climbed its 4 steps and stared into the gray foam abyss of the seat. The straps and electrodes hanging over the dorsal fin shoulders of the chair's back, the clear halo affixed above the headrest. He put in his bit, biting into the soft lining like sinking his teeth into formaldehyde-soaked flesh, and sat down. First, there were the ankle cuffs. Then he reached back and pulled the top straps of the safety harness over his head, an upside-down pyramid with a vacuum buckle at its apex. There were 2 more straps tucked into the seams of the seat beside his hips. Stens dislodged them and clipped each into the buckle, the safety harness now crisscrossing his torso. Finally, the electrodes, a pad for each temple. Stens pressed them there, and they sucked at his skin like sticky lips. From the chair he could look down on them, the newborns. He could watch as antennae embedded in their cribs raised up and pressed smaller electrodes to their pulpy heads. Monsters lived inside those powder puff heads, beasts in the caves of their formless subconscious, and he, Stens, was the monster slayer. He attached 7 more probes and monitor proboscis to himself. When everything was secure, he rolled up his sleeves. The necrotic brown scar tissue there, tiny dots, formed perfect cigarette-burn circles around his forearms. Sten slid them down the cool steel of the chair's armrests, through octagonal frames, gaping chrome mouths with hypodermic teeth. The needles were perfectly aligned there, each point threatening his flesh at a 2-inch distance. At the end of the armrests, rubber grips were held between metal vices. Sten slid his hands under them and curled his fingers between the ridge forms in the grips.
"Ready, Mr. Stens?"
Father Causeway asked through speakers in the chair's headrest.
"I'll be in Breslin by morning,"
Stens replied, as he always did. This was his mantra. Some bit of mostly forgotten poetry from his childhood.
"Commencing injections."
"I'll be in Breslin by morning,"
Stens repeated, closing his eyes.
"I'll be in Breslin by morning."
A 12 needles hissed, piercing his scar tissue, sliding through it like wax paper. Acidic and enzyme activators went into one arm, a psychotropic cocktail up the other. 30 seconds to take effect. 30 seconds of vipers slithering up his veins, of a cloudy cerebrum swelling with acid rain, and lightning struck by electromagnetic current. The halo above the headrest fluxed quantum blue, activating his brainware, the 50% of his axons that had been replaced by direct neuron couplings. When Stens was juiced all the way, when every muscle was numb and filled with phantom tingles, everything revolving inward like a gyro in his mind, Father Causeway opened the electrical current. Stens imploded, turned inside out and shot through the wires of the electrodes, riding the intangible waves. He always thought that this must be what it's like, going to hell, hurtling on that downward spiral from the mortal plane. No body, just pain without filters, soul scraping, all-encompassing. Then suddenly, there was nothing between Stens and the newborns. No glass, no air, no flesh, nothing spongy or blood-filled. He was inside their minds, split into 21 parts and viewing them all at once, like a single image broken up between 21 monitors. At first, it was like gleaning the surface of a great static ocean, the horizon of which seemed to be moving farther and farther away with every delve. More and more water in the pool when there shouldn't have been any. Stens was spending every sleep cycle with his puzzler puzzling over it, trying to make sense of why. But at that moment, there was only the job, and they were all there beneath him, writhing like a mass of damned souls, mewling. The babies still cried inside their heads. In their first minutes of life, the minds of the newborns were just questions with no voice, needs without want. Stens delved beneath the surface, the image broken down into pictures within individual monitors. Stens viewed them each separately and simultaneously. He entered every one. He locked each newborn into a cerebral death roll, probing, penetrating. The contagion affected DNA directly, rewriting the code that laid the blueprint for mammalian form. But the primer, the activating agent, was contained in the subconscious. It was the most literal and terrifying expression of mind over matter. The dark things that lived in the back of the human brain, the birthplace of all nightmares, translated into physical form. It was that link that Stens sought to sever. Savage instinct he had to eradicate. He always found the active strains of their subconscious, those suggestions, like something the devil might have whispered to them in their metal womb that still echoed. This was the job, what he'd been cybernetically and chemically altered to do. Stens had to erase that voice, scrub that wrinkle in the back of their brain smooth until the echo was lost. The first few always forgot it right away. Then it became a struggle to take it out of the heads of the rest. The more Stens tried to drown it out, the louder it got, until it became a shriek, and the shrieks became a chorus so high it threatened to shatter his mind like crystal. That's when he pulled back. Stens hit the delving chair and his body like a shockwave. His eyelids fluttered spasmodically, and he struggled with the tremors in his hands to free himself of the chair's restraints, to weed the wires sunken into his flesh. He crawled down the steps of the dais, rolling onto the floor and gagging the whole way. When he managed himself to all fours, Stens vomited into a curved receptacle built for just that purpose. His bit ended up indistinguishable from the half-digested chunks of beef and vegetables in the stew of his sick. Stens had to root for it, shaking the teeth-marked piece of plastic as clean as he could. Then he pulled a lever at the base of the receptacle, and the strong vacuum pressure seized the offal. It spiraled into a tornado, suspended there at the center of the basin, and then disappeared.
"Do you require medical attention?"
Father Causeway asked a moment later.
"No."
"How many then, Mr. Stens?"
His track marks were crying thin streams of blood. They ran down his arms and pooled around each wrist.
"3."
"Only 3?
"Go fuck yourself, Dad."
"No judgment of your skills or commitment, Mr. Stens,"
the father assured him, unperturbed.
"I was merely lamenting.
Stens knew his averages were way down. A year ago, he could screen a batch of 50 and clear half that. Now he was lucky to clear 2 or 3 in a delve. It was another one of the things plaguing his off hours. Father Causeway waited an exacting amount of time, and then asked,
3, and all clean?
As a whistle.
Stens leaned back onto his knees, arms away from his sides. His hands were gloved in blood and vomit.
As a virgin's sinkhole.
That's quite vivid, Mr. Stens, thank you.
Anytime,
Stens said, spitting stray bile into the receptacle.
Are there numbers, please?
There was an audible clicking in his head. His eyes ticked as what felt like pinchers tugged at his temporal lobe. The microprocessors they'd installed there, an artificial memory and calculator that never made mistakes, kicking over as it assessed the requested information.
4, 9, and 13.
Very well.
Sten stood slowly, like balancing himself on a tightrope. His stomach was a mercury trigger he had to keep perfectly centered. His body felt like a scab, and his mind like an open wound. But he had to see it. Had to watch the beginning and the end of the newborns. The beginning for those he successfully screened. And the end for those he'd failed. On the other side of the glass, clear blue shields formed domes over 3 of the berths. The 3 with numbers corresponding to those he'd just given Father Causeway. The floor opened up beneath them and the berths were lowered through it. They'd be down in processing within minutes, then off to join the race. The human race. Sometimes Stens thought he could see their futures when he was inside. The ones he was able to clear. See what they'd become, or rather, what they'd be made into by the state of necessity. The after effects of the delving process left Stens, left all the screeners, with something of a conjunctive third eye. When those 3 berths were just a memory, just vague cold spots in the nursery floor, the other berths were domed, this time by clear red shields. There was the faintest aerosol whisper, and the remaining newborns all drifted off to sleep. Few things were more humane than a sedative at the right moment. The HPM emitters didn't whisper, didn't make any noise, didn't even light the inside of the berths. There was nothing dramatic or poignant about what came next. What was left. Their flesh didn't melt. There was no blood. No gooey mess. Their bodies simply broke down, crumpled like thick sheets of paper, leaving diamond-shaped scorch marks on the pads that covered the bottom of the berths.
Do rest, Mr. Stens.
He heard Father Causeway say when it was over. He sounded very far away, removed by more than the layer of thermal resin protecting his viewing gallery. Stens touched the opposite pane, the one shielding the nursery.
Sleep with the angels,
he said, even though he knew it was bullshit. His skin felt like ice when the hot water hit it. Stens stood in the narrow box of his shower like a confessional stall, hands braced against the stainless steel. He thought about melting under the hydro flow, melting the way the newborns didn't. His consciousness would thin and dilute with his body, and there'd be nothing but the liquid sensation of swirling down the drain. It would be the exact opposite of the stripped, burning wormhole of the delve. Stens would welcome it. He stood there until the warm jets calmed the gnashing tigers in the pit of his gut. Then he got out of the shower. Toweling off, he noticed his track marks had stopped bleeding, thought about wrapping them, and dismissed the idea. When Stens came out of the lavatory, Maggie was waiting in his room. Magda Ingress, his comrade in arms, a fellow screener. She stood next to the desk, holding his PDA in one hand. The fingers of her other hand curled, knuckles pressed against her lips as she read. She didn't notice Stens right away. He enjoyed the moment of observation, watching the unconscious quirks of her posture, her mannerisms, Her blonde hair was undone, the white flecks in it picking up the soft lighting. Stens thought it deserved a poetic description, something like snow-covered hay. But he was no poet. Maggie looked up from the PDA screen. She smiled a motherly smile.
I heard you had a rough one.
Yeah,
Sten said, sitting down on the edge of his bed.
Because they're usually such a stroll, you know.
Don't be an ass. I was worried about you.
I'm sorry.
Maggie put on an appeased expression with just enough twisted lip to let Sten's know it was forgiven, but not forgotten. She tossed his PDA onto the desk.
I don't know why you read that dreck,
she said, walking around the bed standing in front of him. Maggie smoothed back the wet clumps of his hair.
I like the old crime stories. And Campion was the last pulp novelist in the world, you know. Literally. I think that's a pretty impressive title to be able to lay claim to.
Maggie shook her head.
Too common a little title to be impressive. Too many people with the last something. The last barber, the last butcher, the last garbage man, the last Polynesian, the last Italian, the last Central African.
I guess we're just the bookend of a race, huh?
Yeah. Well, don't think about that right now. Why don't you just lay back?
Stens did as he was told, swinging his legs onto the bed and inching up the mattress, his wet body dampening the sheets. Maggie was wearing a white tank top. She peeled it off her torso and tossed it, straddling his sharp hips. She reached behind him and started to unknot the tightly packed muscles on the base of his neck. As her fingertips pried the tension there loose, she moved the peaks of her breasts against his chest, down across the cagey outline of his ribs. Stens took solace in the darkness behind his eyelids and let the ripple effect of Maggie's touch spread to every sinew and synapse. He knew that this moment was the best thing in his life, in anyone's life, most likely in the whole fucking galaxy. It was certainly the best thing about what was left of the human race.
So?
Maggie whispered outside his self-imposed veil.
Want to tell me about it?
What can I tell you that you don't already know?
You're only able to clear 3 Stens. 3 out of 21. You can tell me why.
I'm just a boy, I guess, Maggie.
Bullshit.
Stens knew Maggie's average was still twice as high as his. Women were proven to be more attuned to screening, more adept at the delve. No one knew why.
You just don't want to talk about it.
I don't really want to talk.
Well,
Maggie said in a different tone.
If you don't want to talk, then what are we going to do?
And her hands needed lower.
I don't know.
An hour later, holding each other, Maggie kissed his chest and sat up.
I want fruit,
she announced.
And some B3 and biotin will be good for you right now. I'm going to go to the commissary.
No, I'll go.
Are you sure?
Yeah, I need to get my sea legs back.
Stens touched her hair, stroked his fingers through it as he sat up. His gut felt hollow, the bottom lacquered, but at least it was still. Stens pulled on his slacks and boots, covered his torso with a wrinkled white tee grabbed from the top of his hamper. Before he left the room, he looked back at Maggie cast in the light from outside. She smiled at him. The walls of the corridor were gray slate, their grainy finish mirroring images murkily, like reflections beneath the surface of a bog. They gave the impression ghosts walked with you. His boot heels clacked against the deck in steady polymer heartbeats that filled the corridor. You could walk the halls of Munich Satellite for hours and never pass another human being. There were only a handful of them manning a space installation constructed with a 300-person capacity. It seemed the perfect metaphor for the state of the species, a lone Homo sapien walking through empty corridors. On this jaunt, however, Sten's path would intersect. First he heard slow, hollow footsteps, like dominoes falling in zero-G. Then Janik rounded the corner several yards ahead of him. He was the Munich's third screener, older than Stens and Maggie. His curly hair and meticulously groomed mustache were salt and pepper. He was always clad in those threadbare tunic suits, as dull and gray as mule hide. but pressed collars done up all the way like a real soldier. They walked toward each other, the percussion of their heels joined together for a moment in an acoustical bridge, and then moved apart.
You look like hammered shit, Stens,
Janik said as they brushed gazes.
You should be resting.
I am.
Stens didn't stop.
Just sleepwalking.
A few seconds later, Stens realized his clacks were filling the corridor on their own again. He turned around and saw Janik standing there, halted, leaning against the bulkhead. To anyone else, he just looked like a man in the vice grips of a migraine. But Stens knew the truth, could see the truth. It was like looking at two ancient photo negatives under his mind's eye, his blurry third eye. One was of Janik the man, and it melted over the other, the negative of the thing he was about to become. Janik looked up, and their eyes met once more. Janik saw the recognition in Sten's own gaze.
No, Stens, wait!
But there was nothing to wait for. Alert dials pockmarked the corridor walls every 12 feet. Stens flipped the nearest one.
Alert on 5,
he said, looking at Janik and speaking to the computer.
Screener Janik is hot. Repeat, screener Janik is hot.
Klaxons. The entire satellite was a sectional defense grid. The automated response located Janik's biosignature in 1.3 seconds and compartmentalized his position. Two sheets of clear composite slid from the walls in front of and behind him, sealing Janik off. He threw himself against the glass, beating his fists against it and screaming in protest. Silent protest. Nothing resonating through it. Not even vibrations. Stens didn't want to look at him, not because he felt guilt or remorse, but because he could see inside Janik's head. He could see the change starting, the viral strain Janik carried activating. Neuroenergetic effect becoming a chemical reaction that spread throughout his entire body. The deck plates beneath Janik's feet slid back, revealing a second layer beneath that was decorated in the hazard candy cane pattern of yellow and black stripes. Janik tried to make himself a part of the wall, pressing himself against it like an acrophobic on a ledge. But when those stripes parted, nothing waited beneath them but darkness. They unleashed a vacuum pressure that crushed him down into the void. Stens walked to the nearest porthole. He didn't like space, didn't like looking at it, feeling his eyes fall endlessly through it, and he didn't want to see Janik start the change. He supposed he had to look for the same reason he always watched the unscreened newborns broken down after the delve, even if he didn't know what that reason actually was. The satellite ejected Janik. His body spiraled past the piece of space framed by the porthole a moment later. He was still alive. When Janik started to transform, Stens looked away again. But he'd seen enough to know the monstrous thing Janik was becoming. He could tell by the way his lower jaw fell off, and the jellyfish antennae grew in its place. It was the Leviathan strain. The Leviathans were among the first reported transformations. A group of drillers on an offshore oil rig had become hot overnight, and by morning they were terrorizing the mainland. A small preview of what was to come, of a forsaken earth reigned over by monsters, of parents devouring their children, and a future of cold, isolated existence for the few that escaped it. Later, the satellite would dispatch bots to collect samples from Janik's shed, frozen skin, and it would be confirmed in the lab. But they wouldn't bring the rest of him, the Leviathan Janik, aboard. Those things tended to regenerate. Stens walked into a human fish tank, the cubicle surrounding the interior of the door, allowing visitors 4 feet past the threshold before it closed behind them, and they were encased within thermoset filament. Beyond it, the progenitor's office was a snapshot of old-world Earth. Rich burgundy rugs covered the floor. Rich brown wood panels covered the walls. Father Causeway sat at a stained mahogany desk, inlaid with liquid monitors and touchpads and decorated with tasteful, soulless finery. A 5-hour skeleton clock of finished brass counted the endless minutes. The leather bladder of the seat back molded around Father Causeway's shoulders as he leaned into it. He steepled his fingers over his abdomen.
"We'll need a replacement for Mr. Janik, obviously,"
he began. No preamble. No knighted words spared for the occasion.
"I would, of course, like to offer you approval as senior screener of any transfers, but that simply isn't an option, personal shortages being what they are."
Stens didn't say anything. He also didn't give a cold fuck about Janik's replacement. The silence made Stens' point, and Causeway finally offered him a token.
"It's a shame about Mr. Janik."
"I think it was triggered. Intentionally."
"Of course it was. It was triggered by subconscious impulses that activated the contagion."
Stens was a cynical man, apathetic by the standards of some. But even he couldn't talk about the transformation with such matter-of-fact coldness. He knew it wasn't Causeway's own personality. All the progenitors had it. They were the observers, always behind glass, never in any direct contact with the infected majority. All human beings were carriers. But in the progenitors alone, it was dormant. They were M0s. No active strains present.
"No. I think it was triggered by the newbies. I think they activated the strain during Janik's last delve. Intentionally."
"What a fantastical notion, Mr. Stens."
"Don't patronize me, Nobby."
"Mr. Stens, Screener Janik was an M3. At much higher risk than either you or Miss Ingress. Any number of things may have activated the contagion. Quite possibly, it was, as you suggest, the stress of the delving process. However..."
"They're developing a defense mechanism. Each batch of newbies. It's hard to articulate in words. It's like their consciousness is expanding. Exponentially."
"They are newborn infants. Blank slates. What you're suggesting isn't genetically possible. For them to develop a resistance of any kind, they would have to be evolving as organisms. They would, at the very least, have to experience the screening process more than once. And as each new crop is taken directly from my own genetic samples, each crop is being screened for the first and last time."
Stens nodded.
"That makes sense. But logic and detachment aren't tools. They're luxuries. Luxuries that I don't have. There's nothing logical about what I do, Causeway. If you'd been inside, even once, you'd see beyond it."
Father Causeway paused to consider. He pitched forward in his chair, spreading his hands over his lap.
"If I might be allowed to illustrate a point..."
"Will there be actual pictures?"
Causeway was undaunted.
"The honorific used for progenitors. They used to call the priests of religious parishes Father. Did you know that?"
"I've read about it."
"This was back when they had time and numbers as a race for such indulgences. But the title was meant to denote the relationship from God to his mortal representatives, to his children. As progenitors, our title is more a direct reflection of that concept. We are, quite literally, the creators."
"So your point is, you're God?"
"No. No, of course not. What I'm trying to convey, Mr. Stens, is that I am a father. And it is not easy for any father to stand idly by and watch his children die, extinguished so abruptly, so often, over and over again. The progenitors are tasked with years of training to cope with the psychological ramifications. So while I may seem unforgivably detached to you, it is merely a shield that I must carry."
The words and inflections were right, but Stens didn't buy it. Not really. There was an artificial quality. Like an android singing an aria, he hit the notes with technique and without passion.
"The reward is clarity, which as a screener under constant intense mental stress, you lack. Now, is there anything else?"
"There will be,"
Stens assured him flatly. He rapped his knuckle against the glass once and then turned away, walking through the doors. He was in Maggie's room when they red-lighted her for the delve. The two of them were in bed, her cheek resting against the crest of his hip. Sten sifted her hair over and over again, watching the strands twist and wither and fold 100 different ways each time he let them slip between his fingers. That red menace above the door started blazing. Distant Mars against the starless sky of the darkened room. Stens almost didn't let her get up. He had the sudden impulse to hold her there by her slight shoulders and damn everything. Let them disintegrate the entire batch of newborns. Or accept them as is.
Stens, you're clinging,
Maggie informed him. She sounded amused. He realized his palms were filled with the knife-handle curves of her collarbone.
I'm needy,
he said, and let go. She dressed in the dark, a vague feminine shape arching and bending. It was like watching a shadow dance. Maggie buckled a pair of gray slacks and pulled a matching vest over her white tank as she skewered a hastily wrapped bun atop her head with a pen. She looked down at Stens.
Are you gonna wait here for me?
Yeah. You'll need cleaning up. If I run you a bath, can I wash your back?
That's what I love about you, Stens. You understand foreplay.
She left him. He lay in her bed, cast in the seedy noir light of that red globule, feeling like a character holed up in some cheap motel room from one of his old pulp novels. Finally, the light faded out, its red-hot core going cold. And then it was just dark again. Stens must have drifted off. He came back to the static howl of the satellite's emergency alarm. At first, still half in dreams, Stens thought someone else had gone hot, could see the monsters rampaging through the corridors. But it was a medical emergency alert, a stat call. That meant there'd been an accident. Or someone had. Maggie. Stens scrambled from the bed, wrestling with the sheets as if they were wraiths trying to hold him down there in the dark. He grabbed his pants, leaving his boots and shirt behind, and was halfway down the outside corridor before he had them on all the way. The doors to the delving chamber were already open. Stens bolted past the threshold and almost slipped. As he recovered, he looked up to see Father Causeway surveying from his airtight gallery, his expression stone-carved and eyes vague as ever. Maggie was seizing on the chamber floor. She'd managed to free herself from the delving chair and crawl behind the dais before the dry gill convulsions began playing spastic marionette with her body. Three women, the satellite's entire human medical staff, surrounded her. They wore flesh-toned scrubs, caps, and masks. Petrified where they stood, they looked like unfinished mannequins. A crash drone rattled around them in a drunken figure eight, awaiting directions. And a diagnostic bot hovered behind Maggie's head, both spheres vibrating spastically.
Help her, damn it!
Stens yelled at them, but he could see the hesitation and repulsion in their bodies, the fear in their eyes, behind their eyes.
She's not hot!
He insisted.
It's a fucking aneurysm! Help her!
When none of them snapped out of it, Stens turned to the glass.
Causeway, I swear! She's running cold! I can see it!
Please attend to Miss Ingris.
Father Causeway instructed the biotechs. The command, not a request, animated the human automatons. One of the women brought the hovering bot to bear inches above Maggie's head, while another prepared an injection from the crash drone to still her. Once she was motionless on the deck, a wormhole of illusory blue light opened from the bottom of the bot, boring into the center of Maggie's forehead. The high-res fluoroscope transferred images to a display on the bot's round body. The three featureless scrubs consulted over the data, chattering like ferrets, and finally settled on laser clipping the rupture in Maggie's brain. It was nothing more than a stabilizing measure, a bandage applied to a cracked floodgate so they could move her down to the medbay. When she was loaded onto the featherweight gurney, when they were sailing her from the chamber, Stens spared one look into the nursery at the newborns resting in their sunken beds. Then he chased after the procession. Maggie's body made it to the medbay 60 seconds later. Her mind, however, remained in the delving chamber. A side door opened, and Father Causeway stepped from a wedge of amber light into the darkness of his office. gossamer steam clinging around him like a moth-eaten aura. Seal slippery, he held a towel around his waist. His feet were bare. Watching him from behind the father's mahogany desk, Stens wasn't surprised that the rest of Causeway's body appeared hairless as well. When he called for the lights, and Stens was illuminated there in Causeway's high-backed chair, the father's composure finally slipped.
What in the hell do you imagine you're doing?
Father Causeway's bald head swiveled toward the cubicle encasing the entrance to his office. He saw the cat burglar hole Stens had cut with the laser saw he'd taken from medbay after watching Maggie die.
I let myself in,
Stens explained, while the father was still contemplating the diamond-cut pane of glass on the rug.
Mr. Stens, I understand you're distraught over the death of Miss Ingress, but this is simply inexcusable.
Worried about contagion? No contact with us active strain types, right? Now, I'm only a patchwork psychic, but I'm pretty sure you can't reinfect the infected.
I'm sorry?
You're no one's father, Father, in any sense. You're not a progenitor. The progenitor. In my grief, you see, I went on a little tear through the medbay records. They haven't taken genetic samples from you, ever. And there are no records of any being transferred here, either. I put the rest together myself. Do you ever read crime novels?
Stens didn't wait for an answer.
So what are you, an M2? Not an M3 like Janik.
M1.
Ah, right. Of course, the lowest level of risk. That would make sense for an overseer, a taskmaster.
So you've played detective and uncovered a bold conspiracy, is that it? Do you feel better, Mr. Stens, confronting me?
You've been recycling genetic material from the newborns themselves, haven't you?
Yes.
Causeway brushed a hand down his face, the moisture collected there dripping through his fingers. Stens wasn't sure if it was condensation from the shower, or if it was sweat.
There are no choices left, you see. There are no more M0s left. Your former progenitor was the last, I'm afraid. When his strain became active, I was sent to replace him. The screen newborns are the last remaining source of dormant carrier DNA.
Stens shook his head.
You fucking idiots! You really don't get it, do you? They're evolving! You forced them to!
As you said, Mr. Stens, you are not a scientist.
I don't have to be. It's a fucking law of nature, Causeway. Survival. Self-preservation. It's not just an instinct, it's a genetic trait. Probably the one genetic trait shared by everything that ever lived. Unless you count the dodo, maybe. I don't know. But the newbies have developed an immunity to the delve, and they're using the contagion as a defense mechanism. My guess is the screens will be completely useless pretty soon, and anyone who tries will end up like Janik. Or like Maggie. Or like you.
Like me?
Stens raised his hand from the shadows beneath the desk. The gun in his hand was an EM-propelled stinger loaded with static shock rounds.
Interesting thing to keep in your desk. An instrument of death? Sort of goes against your whole vibe of creation, doesn't it?
The father didn't comment.
You know what I think, Causeway? I think it's been evolution all along. For all your guys' bullshit about alien viruses and bioterrorism gone awry, never a theory that panned out to actually explain the contagion. I think whatever those things are, they're just a big leap into mankind's future. And you just refuse to step aside.
Would you, Mr. Stens? Is that what you're trying to accomplish here? Do you think killing me and allowing a batch, perhaps two, of unscreened infants to thrive will undo our recovery? There are thousands of satellites. We're only one of six that orbit just this moon.
It doesn't matter. Not anymore. Your last line of defense has failed. Do you get it? The contagion has taken the fort.
That notion seemed to frighten Causeway more than the gun.
You don't know that.
Oh, but I do. I've seen it. From inside. The truth. And say what you will, the newbies have never lied to me. You have. You've been telling whoppers.
Oh, do forgive us. We're only attempting to contain the possible extinction of the human race and repopulate the species. I apologize if we couldn't pause to consider the feelings of Lofgren Stens.
I do.
Stens said magnanimously.
I do forgive you.
But he didn't lower the weapon.
And what will you be killing me for, then? What? Love? Revenge? Truth? Personally, I can't think of anything more trite. What do you think, Mr. Stenz?
I think I'll be in Breslin by morning,
Stenz said. He shot Causeway twice. He delved one last time. Stenz programmed one of the bots to work Causeway's controls on a time delay and strapped himself into the delving chair. He'd increased the volume of the ampules beyond all safety limits, went double and triple on the psychotropics and activators. If it didn't kill him, the solution would probably drive him mad, fry his brain, or do one and then the other. He didn't care anymore. When the pneumatics hissed and the needles jabbed his veins, Stenz thought he was ready for it. And then he exploded. At least that's what it felt like. Stenz felt himself being ripped apart at the molecular level and violently dispersed into a billion pieces. Propelled at the speed of thought, he could feel the intense ache in his jaw, but he couldn't hear himself screaming. Finally, he left all physical awareness far, far behind. There was the static ocean filled with the crying minds of the newborns, where it always was. And his Stenz broke beneath that surface, as he always did. But this time, the delve was deeper than it had ever been before. He found he couldn't stop himself. He was sinking at 1,000 miles a minute, and the depths were unlike any he'd explored. Stenz saw creatures. No, not creatures. Beings. Not the leviathans or legends that man had made of himself after the contagion came, that had devoured the earth and all its children. These were luminous. They absorbed the light, took it in, and purified it. They became beings of light themselves. That's what the progenitors had inadvertently created, and that's what Stenz had been made to destroy. How many batches of newborns had he doomed by killing this new potential? Stenz realized it was not the monsters in our nature slain by better angels, but minds, souls, spirits, whatever name you gave it, that existed free from any monsters, free from the baggage of mankind's past. They were clean slates. In their hands, in their minds, the contagion would no longer be a plague of self-destruction. It would become a tool. It would become anything they wanted it to be. And so would they. As his consciousness continued to expand, as it traveled beyond the point of no return, and Stenz knew for certain that he'd left his body behind for the last time, that realization brought him calm. He was leaving behind hope in the form of 21 infants who would grow up free of monsters, and perhaps, with his final delve, a piece of himself would remain with them too. Thank you for listening to Delve by Matt Wallace, narrated by Rick Stringer, with the voices of Chuck Tomasi, Anton Buntik, Neil Stringer, and Leanne Mabry. We will have more information about them in our show notes and on our MySpace and LiveJournal pages. To find out more about Variant Frequencies, please go to our website at www.variantfrequencies.com. If you like Variant Frequencies, tell your friends about us. Thank you. From the Variant Frequencies team, Matt Wallace, Han Stringer, and Rick Stringer.
Bob Nerdly is a real Geico insurance customer, not an actor. To help him with his message, we've hired professional voice actor John Bell.
I was having problems downloading my podcast.
In a world where critical information has to get through.
I went to chuckchat.com and clicked on Technorama and gave it a listen. tech, science, sci-fi interviews. It was great.
A new wind was beginning to blow.
Chuck and Craig are funny, informative. I don't know what I would have done without them.
In the fight for justice, two men stood up to help those in need.
Geeko Insurance. Only available by listening to Technorama at chuckchat.com.
Feed your inner geek. My throat is starting to hurt.
KJ.
Yes, Chris.
Do you have a second?
Sure. What's on your mind?
I'm having a problem.
Really? What is it?
I don't understand women.
You know, Chris, I had the same problem until I found Tag in the Seam.
Tag in the Seam? What's that?
It's an insightful and informative podcast for real women.
Oh, really? But will it answer the really big questions?
What do you mean?
Well, you know, what are they thinking and what are they feeling and how do they work down there?
Yes, Chris. Leanne will answer all of your questions.
Thanks, KJ.
You're welcome.
You know, and KJ.
Yes?
Do you ever have that not-so-fresh feeling?
Will you two stop yammering? One of you get me a beer. I'm trying to watch the game.
For the answers to all of your questions, go to www.tagintheseam.com.
Calling Pizza World, how can I help you?
Yeah, give me a large meatgasm pizza, but instead of sauce, could you just cover it in ranch dressing and throw some extra hot wings on top of that?
I'm sorry, sir. The health department said we can't sell the meatgasm pizzas anymore.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that. You must be breaking up.
Sir, I said that...
What's that? No, I can't hear you. What's that? You're breaking up! You're breaking up!
Tony Mast, podcaster. A man barely able to avoid fast food.
Gentlemen, we can reshape him. We have the technology. We have the capability to make the world's newest healthy podcaster. Tony Mast will be that man. Better than he was before. Better, stronger, faster.
To follow Tony's progress, listen to his podcast at www.tonyslosingit.com.